Hello, friends. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, founder of Incandescent, and I'm so happy to introduce you today to our new client and podcaster, IP attorney and author Timothy Trainer. That's intellectual property for everyone that might not know that. And we're so excited to hear what he thinks about international trade and all kinds of amazing things, including his 7 books. So I had the privilege of meeting Tim at Elaine's Literary Salon, another one of our shows that features authors. And he had just published his 3rd novel, The China Factor. In the months since, our Incandescent team has had the privilege of launching his website, timothytrainer.com, so please go check it out, and post entries to his blog that he said he wasn't going to write regularly, but now he's been inspired to just talk about all kinds of important things as they pop up in the news. And Tim, right, there is just no shortage of news. So welcome to your show, Timothy's Travails.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yes.
And appreciate all the support.
Well, it's great. You know, we love bringing to light what's going on with authors, what you all think, bringing your characters to life when it's a fiction work and you've published just 7 books. And so some of them are fiction, some of them are not. And we're going to talk about all of those very cool things. So, Tim, you talked about being an IP attorney for 30 years. Tell us a little bit about your career.
Well, copyrights, trademarks, patents are all things that are pretty essential to companies, businesses, individuals, inventors, creators, writers. So it's really something that people don't think about, but it's part of everyday life. You know, whether you go to the grocery store, see all those brands, whether it's toothpaste, batteries, or whatever it may be, or walking down the street, you see all that signage. So we don't think about intellectual property, patents, copyrights, trademarks, and then you've got your cell phone that's got literally thousands of patents inside that little thing that you hold in your hand. So all that creativity that occurs all over the place that we don't really think about on a day-to-day basis. We're not conscious of it, but it's there and we use it all the time, every day, all day, especially with all the digital stuff we use these days. It's everywhere.
And, you know, I think that a lot of people don't realize that, but we have attorneys to take care of us to make sure that if you're a content creator, that you're protected. So tell us about your work. You spent 30 years in working for the government.
Yeah, well, I was in and out of government, but a lot of it was based on the protection or enforcement of copyrights and trademarks more so than patents. And eventually what happened was the increased international trade and basically fake or what people consider counterfeit goods got to be an area where I got into when I worked at the U.S. Customs Service, which is now Customs and Border Protection. And that resulted in me traveling with a lot of other government agency people doing basically trade negotiations and things like that. So essentially, I would say persuading our trading partners to do a better job of protecting patents, trademarks, copyrights, because those are the heart and soul for a lot of American companies that trade internationally. So seeing things getting ripped off and stolen is a big deal to them. It's a loss of revenue and it has an impact on, you know, their market share and profits and jobs and so on. So it's also got something to do with consumer safety because, you know, the last thing you want to have is getting something, whether it's medicines or parts in your car or toothpaste or whatever it may be that you use. It's not the real thing, right? Those are not things that are tested and they're not up to standards. So you don't know if when you get a fake good, what it might do to you, depending on what it is. So that's kind of the area I focused on. I was in for basically all the time I was working, but it also allowed me to travel to a whole lot of countries I never expected to go to and places, some of which I don't mind going back to and some places that I hope I don't go back to.
And you absolutely spent time in China, which
yes,
is very much up in the news right now. It is almost May 2025 and every day things are changing at a rapid clip. So tell us a little bit about your thoughts on this.
Well, the one thing I've always thought about when dealing with the Chinese, and I think people have to be very aware that you're dealing really with a very sophisticated trading partner. They learn how to deal with international trade, and the people that they have that are specialists in international trade and their various government agencies are very smart people. They know what they're doing. They know what's going on in the world because just like our people and our government, they've traveled a lot, they've experienced a lot, and so they are not starters. I mean, they're just not beginners anymore. They've been at it now for decades, and they're more sophisticated, and they understand the global trade regime. And we shouldn't underestimate their capabilities and their thought process and their ability to analyze and assess what's going on.
And so talk a little bit about what is going on with America and China and what you're seeing happening and what you're forecasting if we don't change course.
Well, I think we have to be realistic that China is a big economy. You know, they're the second largest economy in the world. And while they, up to now, we've looked at them as just a place of cheap labor, it's not just that. They have a lot of high tech, and they're capable of doing a lot of things that we do. And they're also very strategic thinkers, whether it's dealing with the United States, dealing with Africa or South America or the European Union. They know that they may have to flip and maybe put more emphasis on other parts of the world in order to get what they want that they were getting from us. And certainly we've got a couple of sectors that were pretty reliant on exports to China, and the Chinese are able to say, well, if we're not a reliable trading partner, we can find what we want in other places. Certainly in some areas they've done that. And we saw that during the first term of, the Trump administration, when the ag sector ended up needing a lot of subsidy because of the loss of markets. So they may not be the only people that are in dire straits if this goes on for any length of time.
So you're a clever man with a good imagination as a fiction writer. So play this out. What do you forecast could happen if these tariffs continue and there's no turning back from them?
Well, I think that it's not just China. I think a lot of trading partners are going to say, well, if the U.S. is not a reliable trading partner, we certainly have to strengthen our ties with alternative sources and alternative markets. If we're not going to play by the global rules that we actually did a lot to establish, then they'll continue and find alternative ways of trading, and everybody will take, a hit, and everybody's going to feel some pain, but every country will do things that are in their best interest. And if their best interest is to look elsewhere and not to the United States, that's what they'll do. Now, granted, you can't do any of these things overnight. It takes time. So the question really is, do some of them cut deals simply for the near term with a long-term view that we're actually going to be working to solidify supply chains elsewhere while we have to deal with this interim period? You got to have a plan A, B, C, and D, given the current circumstance, because at the moment, anyway, I mean, if I'm an outsider, not an American, but if I'm working for another country and another government, I'd be saying, well, we may have to cut a deal for now, but for the long term, I'd be looking to say, how do I ensure our best interests are protected down the road by securing something else with other people, other groups of countries? We're just, at the moment, we're just not reliable.
And China, of all cultures, is very much into playing the long game, right?
Oh, yes. Okay. I mean, they're the ultimate people in playing the long game. I mean, generally speaking, some of these Asian countries always look at things from a 30, 40, or 50-year perspective, unlike we do. I mean, we want immediate gratification for lots of things. They'd like that, but they're also able to look long term.
Yeah, pretty amazing. All right. And that is going to be the focus of your show. You're going to bring on experts. We're going to have you talk all about what's happening and as it unfolds. And it seems to unfold at a remarkable clip, like we said. So let's shift over to these 7 books you've written. You've always had a passion for being a writer. Tell us about your journey.
Well, I started, of course, with professional writing, and I did a number of books about intellectual property, protecting intellectual property. So 15 years of doing an annual treatise on that, updating that, and then a couple of side books while I was doing those things. But eventually in the last few years, now that I've pretty much retired from actively being involved in the intellectual property world, writing the fiction side of things. And that's rather interesting when you take what you've done in the past and try to apply it in a fictional setting.
So tell us about these fiction books. So you've written a handful of them at this point, including your most recent, The China Connection and The China Factor. So we want to know about the characters and plot summaries and all that good stuff.
Well, nothing ever goes necessarily according to plan. And so while some people may get into heavy duty outlining prior to writing, I tend not to do it quite that way. And I found out right off when I did my first novel, characters can take over and end up telling you where they're taking you, the writer, sometimes. So, and certainly with The China Connection and The China Factor, that has happened, where the characters, I've got several characters from The China Connection that also get into The China Factor. And, you know, as a male writer, I thought that my main character would be a male character in the books. But that did not necessarily happen. I found myself writing where I had two very strong female characters in The China Connection. And of course, they carry over into The China Factor, mainly because for whatever reason, they tended to take over the storylines more so than the male character I thought was going to be the guy that basically would be in the book and have a greater role. I mean, he's there, but not quite like the women.
So, and why is that?
I don't know why that is. It just happens. It's a natural progression that occurred while I was writing it. So I hate to predict what's going to happen sometimes when it comes to characters, because as you write scenes and you work them through, sometimes they take a turn that, you know, I'm not even expecting, even though I'm in control of the pen or the keyboard. Things happen that I didn't anticipate.
And we hear that a lot. Strange. We hear that a lot at Elaine's Literary Salon, because it's this collection of authors, hundreds, that Jeffrey James Higgins, who's the host of that show, who interviewed you, and he's a best-selling author. He's espionage and crime and mystery and all that good stuff. And everyone talks about that, that it's sort of there, the channel.
Yeah.
It just funnels through them. What does that feel like?
Strange, because, you know, when you're writing, you think you're the one that's in control. And all of a sudden a scene occurs and something happens. And I think for me, perhaps the strangest situation was Mei Lin, who is in both The China Connection and The China Factor, who was not even on the radar screen at all at the beginning of that book, wasn't even in the book the first 35 or 40 pages or so, my recollection is. And all I was looking to do in a scene was to simply put another woman in the room where the scene was occurring without even a name. And somehow she went from no thought at all to a main character, and then being, you know, perhaps equivalent to the main character in The China Connection. And then I have her in The China Factor as well. Maybe not quite as strong a role, but certainly still playing an important role in that book. But yeah, things happen that you don't expect.
I love that. And it's so fascinating. And that's what we'll talk about more. I'm excited to actually have you have a conversation with your characters, because to me, you know, these stories are between the covers. So one of the shows we also produces Authors Between the Covers, talking about this process of writing a book and telling a story. So bringing the characters out of the book and bringing them to life, I think, is just going to be so much fun for your show. But we're also going to talk a lot about your experience and background. So you grew up as an army brat, you say.
Yes.
Tell us about that. And you wrote an amazing book about that called The Fortunate Son.
Yeah. I don't think if you're an army brat up to a certain age, you're never not an army brat or a military brat. It doesn't matter which branch of the service. My father was was an active army guy until I was a junior in high school. And so people can't maybe relate to this, but in during the 12 years of school, I went to 10 schools during those 12 years. So we moved around, and of course, it was during the Vietnam War, so that probably added to us moving around more than we would have in a different time. So that's always been a big influence. And so from that perspective, what the book you're referring to was because I met a lot of guys that my father served with in Vietnam, and I've gotten to know them. And at one point, one of them suggested I should write a book about my father, which I was extremely reluctant to do, didn't want to do, partly because he was a very private guy, and I thought for sure he wouldn't want a book like that. But ultimately, we did the book, and frankly, it's more about them than it is about my father. So 14 of them participated, so I interviewed all these guys, and we turned that into, it's not a long book. It's a short book, but a tough book to do. But it really talks about their experience of being drafted, being sent to Vietnam, that process, and how they've all actually stuck together. They're still in touch with each other. It's been 55 years, 56 years since they served together, but you know, they're a small, tight group of guys, and yeah, they care about each other. And that still is true today.
And that theme of what matters, that always strikes me, you know, especially now when things seem to be just, you know, whack-a-mole, and we can't really trust what we've always trusted. That human connection, that seems to be like the thing that matters and sticks. So I love that. And you have video interviews with all of them on YouTube, which are also on timothytrainer.com, which is really fascinating. You've written beautiful blog posts about it. And, you know, I encourage everyone to look at the insights that Timothy has, because they're really powerful and profound and important, and I'm sure they will strike a chord with you. So as we finish episode one, introducing us, tell us what's coming forward on the show.
Well, I've got a couple of people in mind. Certainly somebody who actually worked at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. We'll try and nail him down for a sit-down chat for a few minutes. I won't give out the name or anything at this point until we nail it down for sure, but hopefully he'll be receptive to chatting about his take on what's going on, because he's actually spent much more time in China than I ever did. And he continues to be active and involved, and knows a lot of people. So it'll be interesting to hear his take on what's going on and what might occur. I think the other area that's also China related in a way is to have somebody maybe just talk about technology and artificial intelligence, because that's becoming a greater part of everyday life as well, and all the things that we see, and again, you know, all the technology we use, and how that's going to perhaps change things in the coming years. So it's a fast moving thing, right? It's so we've got a couple of people in mind that hopefully will touch on those subjects that are still very current and unfortunately influencing us in ways maybe we don't want them to influence us.
Yeah, and that's what these shows are all about, you know, what's happening every day and how people with different perspectives are bringing what especially people like you are bringing to the parties that can educate us and just give us some information that we may not get in other places. So I am so excited about Timothy's Travails, a monthly show. So this is the May episode, and then we'll tell our guests coming soon about who will be on in June. So thank you, Tim. Thank you for being part of the Incandescent family. We really appreciate you. And we go to timothytrainer.com, check out his books, The China Factor, The China Connection, and so many more. They're all in the sidebar. You can see them and scroll down and get the summary. And so thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. To all of our friends, we will see you next time on Incandescent Radio and Incandescent TV. Be on the lookout for Timothy's Travails.